This time of year, everyone talks about going dry. But at Athletic Brewing Company, we're skipping that because we prefer going athletic, which isn't dry at all. From crisp Goldens to hoppy IPAs and limited releases in between, you'll find something that fits your style. Every single non-alcoholic brew is packed with flavor and the same craft experience you love. So yeah, you could call it dry, but there's really nothing dry about it. Find your new favorite near beer at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic Brewing Company, fit for all times.
All right, everybody, we are back in your lives, Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, make sure to go to the PPV.com socials, follow along with them as we gear up for what should be a very busy fall. Not the busiest August. It's actually a little lull. Like, there's a few fights at the end of the month. I'll be heading to Orlando for a back-to-back MVP extravaganza, 22nd and 23rd of some pro box fights. There's the Moses Atuma card. He's fighting Dillian White August 16th. But Chris, first off, how are you? Secondly, some lean times in the boxing world, but we're just enjoy summer. Enjoy living your lives out there, everybody.
Dan, first things first, let me just say, we're getting a little spoiled because now we're talking a lean August. You just mentioned like three different fights. Dude, a lean August used to be like a fight. We a couple years ago, you and I were struggling for big fights or even just consistent fights. Last couple years have been really, really good. So boxing has been in a great place. And in terms of how am I am hot, dude. It is Florida. It is August. My AC crapped out. I'm perfect timing. Amazing. Got to buy a whole new unit now, which I should have did, I guess, a while ago, but timing's not great. So I'm here trying not to move too much. I got my ice water. Sorry for the fans at home when they hear the clank.
Oh, you're
going to
clank that around? No, it's not in glass, so I think we're good. If it was in glass, we'd have a problem. Chris is staying hydrated.
That's what everyone complains. I'm sitting on an ice pack, literally, because it is.
You're sitting on an ice pack?
I'm sitting on an ice pack because it is 94 degrees in my house right now.
Fuck, that sucks.
Yeah, dude.
Turning up the heat, cranking up. So Chris gets ornery in this episode. We know why.
It's barking.
A voicemail episode, everybody. We collected a lot of voicemails. Appreciate everyone that sent them out. I haven't done this in a while. We will talk briefly about the fights that happened this past weekend. Oscar Duarte picks up a win over Kenneth Sims. Really good fight. Good stylistic fight. Sims is the boxer. Doesn't have a ton of power. Duarte is the seek and destroy guy. Duarte gets the win. Very close. 7-5, 8-4 type of fight. I thought Duarte definitely won. I wasn't that impressed with him, though. I came into this fight thinking, all right, this guy could be something at 140. I mean, he looks the part. He has a great fan-friendly style. He's won three in a row since the Ryan Garcia loss. And I was like, all right, this guy can be a player at 140. But I came away with a little more questions than I did answers. I think he kind of gassed out a little bit. He kind of a little one-dimensional on offense. Got the win, that's most importantly. And, you know, he will get a title shot or he will be positioned to fight someone at 140. That's Oscar Duarte.
Yeah, you gotta think from both directions. I like Duarte. I think he's looked really good recently since he moved up to 40 after that Ryan Garcia fight. I think that fight more just was the moment got to him and he wasn't ready for that. But since then, he's been training with Robert Garcia, who I get to speak to regularly, and he's been on a real tear. I think Robert's really improved his game and made him more than just like a seek and destroy, come forward puncher guy. Because listen, if he was just that, Sims would have beat him and he would beat him handling. I think that a lot of people, even yourself included, is underestimating how good Sims actually is. I think Sims is excellent. So when you get that kind of fight, two guys who are evenly matched that way, and you saw some of the holes in Duarte, he can be outboxed. But I think Sims is one of those guys who outbox most guys in a division. He did deserve to win the fight. It was a very, very close fight. I think both guys are still players. But I like Duarte against any of the champions in 140. I think that he's one of those guys. He's a hardworking effort guy. He's physically very strong. He's a good puncher. And from what Robert tells me, he works really hard in the gym, stays in shape year round. So I think he still has a lot of potential. And I don't want to ceiling him out just because he had a tough fight with Sims, who can really, really box.
No, Sims is really good. It's the type of fight where Sims came out looking good. Like the loser came out looking okay. Like, he didn't get blown out of there. There was a few rounds where, a few moments early on, where he was getting rocked some shots. And I was like, why is this guy standing in the pocket? Move around, stick around. And then the second half of the fight, you know, Sims was kind of on the front foot. And it was Duarte on the, you know, on the retreat at times. But really good fight. But at 140, you know, I like to look at the ring rankings. I don't, like, once again, full disclaimer, all rankings are flawed. They have bias behind them. I just go to this site because they put them put together very nicely, cleanly for me to see. They don't have Duarte or Sims in their top 10. I think Duarte is in the top 10. But in terms of the champions that you just talked about, there's Richardson Hitchens, there's Matias, there is Gary Antoine Russell, and that's it, right? At 140 in terms of champs. Matias? Listen, isn't
it? Yeah, Matias.
Matias, Hitchens, Russell. Who's the, has the other bell? Is, does one of them have two? Tiafimo, of course. Yeah. Sorry, I had it pulled up. Yeah, Tiafimo's a champ who is lingering. I don't know what division he's in. Yeah, Duarte makes fun fights with any of these guys because of his style. Like, you put him in there with Hitchens, that would be fun. Put him in with Matias, it would be a brawl. Put him there with Puelo, it would be awesome. Barboza, Paro, Russell, Martin, Dalton Smith will be fighting Matias, it seems like, in November. Good fights. And he has a good, you know, he's got Oscar behind him. He's got the push. I love that they've put this fight in Chicago, too, which is Sims' hometown. Chicago is a great fight city. They just really don't do enough fights there.
Yeah. I mean, we used to, Chicago used to be a hotbed for the Polish fighters. So the big Polish fighters, you know, the Galatas of the world, the Tomasz Adamczyk of the world, the Adam Konaski. Those guys, the Chicago was a second home for them. But you're right. It is a good fight city. It has good history. It was a cool idea that they did that. And it was also cool because they made good fights. Like, it was a good card. Like, it was an entertaining fight. It wasn't like you'd think of like a normal Golden Boy card. It was kind of like, it was more like in the pro box, 50-50 matchups, good fights, you know, kind of, because I look at, I know this is going to sound bad, but I look at Pro Gray and Jojo Diaz as sub-championship level guys now.
Yeah.
You know, they're over the hump, but they can still make really good, entertaining fights as long as they stay in that lane. Like, I don't want to see, you know, Pro Gray jump and fight Duarte next. I don't want to see him fight Matias, but this is boxing. We probably will get that. I don't want to see Jojo Diaz with those guys. Emiliano Vargas called out both guys. I thought that was cool. That was cool of him. I think that's the right kind of movement to make right after you had a big,
stellar
win. Oh, we didn't speak about that yet. Fastest KO in the Theater at the Garden history, Emiliano Vargas. How about that?
You put that on TikTok. I mean, he's a big TikTok guy. I see him all over TikTok now. He could put that fight, his entire fight, he can fit it in 15 seconds. Right on the app.
When your whole fight's a highlight, you know, when your whole fight's a replay, not even a highlight, your whole fight's a replay. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, Vargas is, I know we're not talking Vargas right now, but he is, I have high hopes for him. I'm starting to get excited about what he can do for the sport. I'm getting excited what he can do for this sport and if he could be the next. We need stars. We need American stars. And I have a lot of promise for him and Abdullah Mason for different reasons. But back to Chicago. You know, Chicago giveth, Chicago taketh away. It's amazing fight city. It's an amazing city in the summer. I was jealous of all the Golden Boy people that got to hang out in Chicago for a weekend in the summer. But man,
Chicago summers rule.
Oh, so cool. Their commission had a tough night. In the Duarte Sims fight, one of the rounds was 2-minute round. They shaved off an entire minute, which probably benefits Sims because you're in there with a stalker like Duarte, but that's not a good look. And then over in the Pro Gray Diaz fight, there was a moment where Diaz got cut, goes over to the corner. The doctor steps onto the apron. The camera is right in their grill. And how many fingers am I holding up? Doctor's holding up one. Diaz says two. How many fingers am I holding up? Doctor's holding up two. Diaz says one. All right, he's good. And it was a comedy routine. And if it was like, I posted it and it has a ton of over 100,000 views on our Instagram. Like I said, oh, this is funny, but it's also sad. And I have a bunch of people saying, this is not funny. And it's not funny. It's you laugh if it wasn't so dangerous.
Right.
That was a bad night. Listen, Chicago doesn't put on a lot of fights. So this commission's not used to these amount of eyeballs, these amount of reps. You know, the timekeeper was rusty. The doctor hasn't probably done a big fight in a long time. I don't know the doctor at all. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But all in all, Chicago, And this is why you never leave Vegas. This is why you rarely leave California, Florida, New York. Because those are the big commissions that know how to handle fights.
Yeah, and listen, it's like anything. Use it or lose it. If you don't have a lot of fights coming through there, guys aren't staying sharp, you get situations like that. You get people filling in that don't normally do that. It's a ringside physician. It's like, oh, we're just going to grab anybody and just don't throw them in there. And yeah, and you get situations like that. And it's funny, I got a funny story. I mentioned Robert Garcia, who is the trainer of Oscar Duarte, and I've been speaking to Robert about Oscar. And Paulie and I were kind of joking, just like you and I were, about that situation. And then Robert kind of like, you know, teaching moment was like, guys, you know, this is actually a really dangerous thing. And he told his story about how he had double vision in his career. And it's one of the reasons he retired when he did. And he's retired three of his own fighters because he knows the telltale signs of when guys are seeing or having double vision, which then reminded me, I had double vision when I broke my orbital. Mine, you know, resolved itself as the swelling went down that was pushing on the optic nerve, which was causing the double vision. But during the fight, I had double vision. But luckily for me, and this is interesting, Dan, I, you know, we have different planes of sight, right? So the bottom half of my vision, if my eyes looked down, I had double vision. But if I looked up, I could see straight. So I tuck my chin and I'm looking up through my top of my, the top half of my vision. So now I don't have double vision. I don't see three Ruslan Provotnikovs. If I kept my chin up and looked down, I would see three Ruslan.
But did they do that for you in between rounds? The finger game?
Yes, they did. But for the most part, I could see until, I couldn't see much in the first round, and I couldn't see much in the 12th round. But the first round was just because it just happened, and I guess it just pushed my eye in or whatever. It was just very uncomfortable. And then the 12th round, because it was actually shut. But my vision wasn't damaged. It was more just the obstruction from my swelling. But then later on, as the swelling went down and I quote unquote was healing, there was swelling behind my eye that was pushing on my optic nerve that lasted about 4 weeks. So I had double vision for 4 weeks.
Yeah, it wasn't. That's crazy. Number one, number two, it's not funny. I understand that, but it's funny because how it played out like a straight up comedy routine, and also it's funny because you just chalk it up hashtag boxing. Oh, it's boxing being boxing. Like, I don't know if Diaz really couldn't see double. I don't know. Maybe he wanted out of the fight. It wasn't a big cut. It was a tiny little cut. And even on the broadcast, Sergio was like, "I don't understand why they're spending so much time over there." You know, it's not a big cut. I don't know. Maybe he was seeing double, and maybe the doctor had a bad moment. Maybe the fight should have been stopped, but it didn't, because but it ended up being a really fun fight. Regis Progre and Jojo Diaz, like, I would say top five contender for fight of the year, not for technique, for absolute just blood and guts, rock'em sock'em stuff. Two guys that are very diminished. Progre reflexes are completely gone. He was staggered in the first round. He was staggered throughout the fight. Anytime Diaz connected flush, Progre's legs went jelly. Then Progre was just landing anything and everything. Every jab, it seemed like he landed anything of note. I thought it was a draw, but Progre gets the win. Diaz was coming up in weight. You know, all those factors lead me to pump the brakes a tiny bit, because Progre, I don't blame him. Like, he got on the mic and was like, I want, you know, a champ. I want a big bag from Saudi. I want this. I want that. I'm like, yo, I get it. You're fired up. You're a former champ. You're coming off of it was very loud in there. You adrenaline's flowing. But, you know, we got to pump the brakes a little bit. Like, this fight was amazing because both guys were of equal level right now. Like, you put Progre in there with any of these top 10 guys I just talked about at 140, I think he's getting knocked out. And Diaz, it was 2-7 in his last 9 fights, coming up in weight. So we need, I understand, fans get excited too. We see a great fight. Let's put him in there. They should rematch each other. They should honestly be not fight anymore. I don't want to be that guy, because I don't want to tell anyone to retire if they want to keep earning a living. But we're not putting Progre in there with me. I just don't see that.
Even Duarte. I mean, you said that, you know, he didn't really impress you, but he's a brutal puncher and he's young and he comes. I don't want to see Progre with a guy like Duarte. That's a damaging fight. And like you said, he's not taking the shots well against. Let's be honest. Jojo Diaz is a 30 pounder. You know, he fought on our cards over in Pro Box TV. He trained at the Plant City training center for Pro Box TV. He's a little guy. He's short. He's got short arms. You know, he's in these weight classes he does not belong in. You got a guy like that who's hurting you and who hasn't scored a KO at 35 or 30 in a very long time, was never really a big puncher. It tells you, man, that your punch durability, your punch resistance goes down as you age. It goes down as you've been hurt more. It goes down as you had more and more fights. Your brain doesn't get better at taking punches as you age. So I agree with you. I'm not the guy who's going to say, you know, anybody should stop. I'm actually the guy that says anybody that wants to fight as long as they want, as long as they medically are cleared, it's up to you. It's your own brain, it's your own face, it's your own hands. You can do whatever you want. I agree. I think these guys fighting each other is the next logical step for both of them.
Yeah, do a rematch because it was really fun. See what's out there for Pro Grey. Like, he's like talking, he wants a title fight, like next, like, or like,
and he might Saudi. Get it. He very well could get it
because he is a name, and you know, no, I don't want to see that. Still fun, awesome fight, awesome, really fun night. Fight. I mean, won my bet too. I bet Duarte by decision. Bet with Dan.
I think betting decisions was a good idea for that card because Sims is I don't think Sims has ever been stopped either.
Yeah, it was. It was plus 160 too, which is a really good number because you know the logic would say, oh, Duarte's is gonna get this knockout or should overpower, get a late TKO type of stoppage. But Sims is very durable, very tricky too. All in all, good card. Nice work by Golden Boy. Felt like these types of cards are slowly evaporating from the boxing landscape. A fight that's not in Vegas or one of these big cities, like a fight that has a bunch of 50-50 fights, not the biggest fight, but good stuff from Golden Boy. So congrats to them. All right, let's get over to the voicemails. We have quite a few of them, so let's jump right in. Here we go.
Hey, boys. So I don't know why everyone is looking forward to September 13th. Terrence Crawford against Canelo Alvarez. Both looked pretty bad in their last fight.
That's it. No goodbye. Not happy, that guy.
I love it. I love it.
Fine. Because a lot of the voicemails have been pro this fight. And now we have a guy who's pouring a little cold water on it.
I love it because I have a lot of casuals who go to me and like, man, I can't wait for this fight. This is the best matchup that could be made. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's certainly not. Definitely not. Definitely not the best fight that can be made right now. I can think of a dozen fights that I would rather see. And a lot of them include Inoue against a bunch of different guys that I would rather see over this fight. But casual fans don't care that much about 122-pound guys who fight across the world in Japan. They care about big names and characters. But at the end of the day, when you look at this on paper, Crawford's 38. Canelo's 35. Neither looked very impressive in their last fight. They're still three weight classes apart. That has not changed, because, you know, and Crawford hasn't fought in a year plus. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of poo-pooing of this on paper. So I'm glad somebody says it. So thank you.
He didn't listener. Say his name. Yeah,
this guy. He came out there and just said his piece and left.
That's the type of guy that definitely calls in the WFAN here in New York. It's like, we need Boone fired. The Yankees suck. I don't look forward to anything. But,
what's up with that bullpen? Yeah, all right, I'm out of here.
I'm out. I'll hang up and listen. But yes, like you said, there are a bunch of fights you'd rather see. There are a bunch of fights I'd rather see both these guys in rather than the one we're getting. Like I'd rather see.
That's a great way to put it too.
Yeah. Boots versus Crawford. I see Canelo versus Benavides, Canelo versus Bivol, Canelo versus anyone at 168 of these top five there.
What about Virgil and Crawford? I like that fight. That got mentioned at one point.
Absolutely. I mean, but this is how boxing works. We'll all be excited on September 13th because it is a big event. We've talked about this numerous times on the show. We need big events, at least one or two of them a year, to stay relevant as a sport. It's on Netflix. We're all going to be excited that week heading into it. Maybe even that guy.
Hey, Dan and Chris. Love the show. This is Nero calling from Hollywood. I was wondering, with so many people taking Bud Crawford to win, I think at one point it felt like a hot take, and now it's becoming sort of a standard take. I hope this isn't too much of an abstract question, but can you think of another time where someone chose what seemed to be a hot take and then become the regular take? And what was the result of that fight? Personally, I think it's a bridge too far for Bud Crawford, and I think people are underestimating Canelo, but who knows?
I I don't know. Like, is he trying to say, like, what fight did everyone get wrong in the lead up?
I think what he's trying to say is, like, what fight has changed, like what atmosphere has changed around a fight as we got closer to it? Like, a fight that seemed crazy, that as we got closer to, you're like, yeah, you know what? Actually, the other guy's probably going to win this fight.
I guess maybe, like, recency bias would say, like, maybe Ryan Haney. That's not the best. I hadn't researched this question at all from this guy. I didn't vet it too hard. No, I just like this first part of it.
Because there
that's the opposite. Because no one was giving Ryan any credit for that one or giving him any chance.
Right. So, there wasn't like a spearhead of movement by people to be like, nah, you know, Ryan can do this, which, you know,
I guess
he could.
Maybe, like, I wasn't too keen. I wasn't too tapped into De La Hoya, Pacquiao. Like, there wasn't Twitter. Was there anyone out there that thought Pacquiao had no shot? And then as we got closer, oh, man, this guy's quick. De La Hoya's got one foot out the door. You know, that's kind of like the same scenario as this fight.
Kind of thinking Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson, where
yeah.
the Mike Tyson effect is always like, oh, of course, Mike.
Any
fight with Tyson, it always starts out, no, dude, it's Mike. I mean, Lennox is tailor-made for Mike. He's all fighting taller guys. He punches up. He's great for that. And then there's going to be some people on the outside like, no, absolutely not. I mean, Lennox used to beat Mike in the gym when they were kids, and you know, they didn't meet in the Olympics because Mike lost on the way to the Olympics. And, you know, Lennox is not going to be afraid of Mike. And then as you get closer, you're like, yeah, you know, Lennox is a different animal. Good question, though, and some really good points made, because I even find myself being like, I can see Bud winning this. Like, I might be leaning towards Bud at this point because Canelo looked so bad last fight. I shouldn't say bad. He looked so unimpressive and uninspired.
And it goes back to our first caller who's not excited, because it's not like Canelo's coming off of some, like, crazy KO streak. Yeah. Crawford literally fought 1 year ago yesterday. That was his last fight. And before that was a year ago. So it's not like a fever pitch for this fight. It's not Golovkin Canelo, their first go around. There's no fever pitch for this. And yes, you can always look at your last performance. Canelo's last performance was at 5 a.m. in Saudi, and he was chasing a guy around the ring. And Canelo and even Crawford's, people were trying to poke holes in. It's the first time going a distance in several fights, 8 or 9 plus fight KO streak. He came into that Madrimov fight. So yes, I would say the cool pick now is Crawford. It's no longer like you're not a hot take guy now. If you say Crawford's going to win, no one's looking at you funny. Like, they're like, yeah, I can see that, which makes it probably a little more appetizing of a fight, but also kind of takes away the luster of, can Crawford climb this mountain? Because it's not that tall of a mountain after all.
Yeah, no, it's funny because this was a hot take from Tim Bradley. And from the beginning, he said Crawford's gonna kick Canelo's ass. But now you're seeing more.
Anyone who said it early, yes, like that. Anyone who got in, it's like buying a stock. Anyone who got in really early and day one or day two said Crawford's going to win, I'll take your that's good. Good job.
Yeah.
Anyone that's jumping on the train after Canelo's fight against Skull, then okay, you're getting this stock way late.
I'm thinking of another fight potentially, because I wasn't so locked into the sport like we are now, but Corrales and Mayweather. I think probably a lot of people at that time were like, Corrales is just a punching machine. He's KOs everybody. He's so big for 130. But as the fight got closer, like you remember, he was a little inactive. I think he was just gotten out of jail for some, you know, something, whatever. And like, timing wise wasn't great. So people were going out there and being like, ah, Floyd's going to beat him. And Floyd's dad said flat out, like, he's going to knock him out. So that might be, I'm just trying to think of the air about that time. I was in high school. So I don't really remember.
That's a really good question. It's really great hard question. To come up with one, because this fight is so unique. Canelo Crawford, you don't really see this too often in boxing. This one's a little long, but it's from our very good friend, Perry.
Hey, Dan, Chris, Perry here. I know I left a voicemail previously, but actually this question I thought was actually more interesting. So long story short, Bibble actually did an interview recently. I think it was in a Russian media, because he was very detailed about his breakdown of Canelo Crawford. And he spoke of Canelo specifically. And basically he said, he felt going into the Canelo fight that he could actually put Canelo out if he caught him with a punch that he didn't see coming. And that came in round 8, where Canelo, with his high guard, was trying to close the distance. Bivol feinted a step inside. Canelo opened up, and he countered Bivol, that is, countered him with a right hook, with a right hand right to the temple and spun out. And he fully anticipated that when he turned around, Canelo would be on the floor. And not only was he not on the floor, Bivol was like, I was shocked that his expression didn't even change. Yeah. And the second thing was, the plan was not to be going to the ropes as much as Bivol did, and his corner was getting upset at him. But he said it was so difficult to consistently wrestle Canelo off. He said he's very centered and very, very thick on the inside, which makes it very difficult to wrestle. And he felt like he was getting tired, Bivol. So he decided to just stay at range and box him. And when he talks about the Crawford fight, he makes it very clear he loves Terrence Crawford and he thinks he's the most skilled fighter in the world. However, he also pointed at Canelo's boxing brilliance, and he feels like that will play a key role, compounded with the size in this fight. He did say he's noticed a slowdown in Canelo's footwork. However, where he still sees Canelo at his optimum best is his ability to take a punch. And he feels like Crawford will start feeling the effects of not being able to face Canelo as the rounds go, and he has to lean with Canelo. Do you guys agree with that sentiment? I know you guys aren't doing predictions right now, but just what are your thoughts on Bivol saying that it was so hard to hurt Canelo with shots he couldn't see, and also wrestling Canelo? He says better be even Canelo have been two of the physically strongest fighters he's fought. Just curious, guys. Thanks.
Perry, always coming with the heat.
Good question. Great points. And I'll tell you this, as someone who sparred with Canelo, everything that Bivol was saying is absolutely true. And it's not so much about hurting him, but he said a key point, hitting him with a shot he doesn't see. Canelo's awareness is very, very good. He's hard to hit with punches he doesn't see, especially with the style that he employs. That high guard, you see everything coming when you're like that. And he's got very good hand position. I was very surprised sparring with him, how good his hand position was, his hand discipline, and his ability to pick shots off and move and catch and be smooth. So he's a very difficult guy to hit with punches that he doesn't see, which makes him a very difficult guy to hurt. He obviously has a very good chin. But yes, physicality-wise, and I was a good wrestler. I was always good, you know, fighting guys on the inside. Canelo was extremely well-balanced. He has a very strong base. He was never off balance when I was sparring with him. His ability to maintain his footwork and close the distance was really good. And even off of defense, I mean, getting him to move and push him off. And I was trying to push him and move him at times as well. Very, very physically strong. And this was years ago. He was still really young when I sparred with him. So all of that being said by Bivol, literally as you're going, I'm thinking, I'm like, yep. Because I know it firsthand. It's one of those things that's hard to see from the outside looking in. Good job, Perry. You know, well, actually, you know, listening to Bivol. But,
good job,
but
Perry, paraphrasing Bivol's.
For finding
bringing it to us. Thank you.
But that's a really good observation by Bivol, which isn't surprising.
I will say this though about Crawford, and the punch that he doesn't see coming.
Yeah.
Speed is Crawford's way to win this fight, but he's moving up. He's gonna be fighting at 168 for the very first time, right, at age 38. Like, I think he'll still be quicker than Canelo, because Canelo's just not, no, that's not Canelo's game. He is fast, Canelo, don't get me wrong, but his speed would be on the edge of Crawford, even at 160. So that, you know, I don't think Crawford's going in there, I'm going to stop this guy. Crawford's going in there saying, I'm going to outbox
him. He might be thinking that.
For best chance to win, best way to win, would it be to outbox him?
Yes, but I think he's going to, and Bivol alluded to this, I think he's going to have to hurt Canelo or make him think twice about something. And I'm just not sure he can do that.
That's what I mean. That's like, come on, the guy's fighting at 168 for the very first time. Canelo has a granite chin, one of the best, all-time best chins ever.
Yeah.
From riding horses, according to Jim Lampley, is getting on the saddle of those horses. Somehow connects to your chin.
That strong base. He's got the strong
base. No, it does. I could see the correlation there.
But the chin doesn't matter. Listen, if you get touched on that button and this thing goes away, it doesn't matter how strong your legs are.
I said this once, I'll say it again. If Crawford staggers Canelo early, it will be an oh shit moment. We will all be wrong. We will be locked in. We will be on the edge of our seats, and we have ourselves a thriller. I don't see that happening because of just these guys have 40, 50, 60 plus fights, and we've kind of figured them out as fighters. But man, that will be a very special moment. We'll not be shocked either, because Terrence Crawford, all he does is just shock people.
He's an alien, dude. The way he's able to find the victories and the way that he's been able to always pull it out, and the performances that he's pulled out over and over and over again. I mean, how shocking was that Spence destruction? Drops him with a jab in round two. Like,
the shocking was how easy it was.
Easy. Easy. It was one of his easiest fights at 47. Like, yeah. Crazy to think that.
And last part of this, what Perry says, the wrestling is, if you follow Crawford long enough, you know that he is like an unbelievable wrestler. His kids are phenomenal wrestlers. Like, there's videos of him pushing guys around, like messing around in locker rooms. And everyone that talks about Crawford was either sparred with him or messed around with him or been around him is like, this dude is unbelievably strong. Like, hand grip strong, like, yep. Pushing guys around. He's going to have to do that in this fight, which, you know, Perry just talked about, Bivol just talked about too, is Canelo being able to wrestle guys off of him. Like, Crawford's going to have to do that as well. He's going to have to lean on what has made him special at the lower weights. I'm curious to see if he can do that in this fight.
Yeah, the difference there is going to be how hard is Crawford going to have to work to impose that strength, because he is the smaller man and he's going to have to work really hard to be able to do that. And Canelo fights at a pretty measured pace, which may be possible, but I don't know. This is becoming a multifactorial analysis for this fight. And this is why this fight, as we get closer, is going to get more and more interesting. Again, when this thing was first talked about, I was like, this is a stupid fight. But now we're getting there. We're like, I mean, if we're here,
so many hypotheticals, bro.
Yeah,
this is like every hypothetical criteria when it comes to debating boxing, like smaller guy versus bigger man, fast versus slow, great chin, all that, like resumes. We're talking, you know, Crawford's
balance
resume
versus Canelo's. Footwork, everything.
Everything. It has literally everything for barbershop conversations. Those still exist. How about this?
Barbershops. Yeah.
What's up, Chris and Dan? JT from Dallas, man. I just wanted to get y'all's take on the hot topic that's been going on, the debate between Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather. You know, I'm young, but I got to see Floyd as his money Mayweather side. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten to research and watch Roy Jones in his prime on YouTube. And I just feel like prime Roy Jones is the best fighter I've ever seen lace him up. There's nobody with the athleticism, with power, and precision that Roy Jones had in the 90s. I just want to get y'all's take on that, the prime Roy versus Pretty Boy or Money Mayweather debate. Thank y'all, man. Great show.
Thanks for that call. What is this? Like, I haven't been following along. Have you? Like, Roy and Floyd are going at each other?
Yeah, Roy, I don't know what the inception of it was, but I believe Roy had said something about the resume of Floyd and then actually compared themselves as they had fought. And Roy's like, nah, I'm pound for pound, I would beat him for sure, kind of thing. And, you know, Floyd would never allow an unchecked, statement like that.
Right, of course.
But my man from Dallas, I agree with you 100%. I've said this on many outlets before. No one beats prime Roy Jones Jr. He is the best fighter I have ever seen. He is the most, I talk about Terrence Crawford being an alien. Roy was an alien, dude. The things that he could do didn't even make sense. It boggled the mind the way that he was able to make really good fighters look so average and so ordinary. So much so that he didn't get a lot of credit for not having dance partners, because he made really good, decent fighters in that era look bad. I mean, beat up James Toney, beat up Bernard Hopkins when they were young. Like, I mean, jumps up to heavyweight and beats up John Ruiz, who was a nightmare for every heavyweight to fight, who beat Evander Holyfield. I don't know, man. Roy was something special. Not that Floyd wasn't, but I just think stylistically, I don't see how Roy doesn't get that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the debate between them fighting each other is silly because they're, you know, so far in weight class. But if you're just debating like who was the better all around boxer and like individually against each other, it's a very, very fun debate, because Roy, like you said, no, I've never seen anyone better than Roy either in terms of like his highlight. You pull up his YouTube highlight reel, it's unreal. You pull up Mayweather's, it's still really, really nice to look at, but it's not the flashy Mayweather's. You know, he won a lot of fights with precision, like check right hooks and defense, which it's just two different styles. Like, Roy's was super flashy. It still translates today. This guy who called in is a younger guy, but when he pulled up Roy's highlights, he was blown away. Mm-hmm. So that's the Roy side of it. The con of Roy, which you brought up too, was the fact that he just didn't have any dance partners. There was like a 5-7 year stretch in HBO where it's like it was minus 1200 favorite, and we just knew for a fact that Roy was going to win. Couldn't find an opponent for him. It's almost like Clarissa Shields today. I'm not saying Shields is on the same level as Roy Jones, but she's so good and she's so dominant that they cannot find her opponents. It just becomes a Clarissa Shields event and a Shields showcase. That was how good Roy was. It was just straight up showcases on HBO until he eventually jumped up and got older and then eventually stopped a bunch of times. But with Floyd, you know, he has the resume. I don't care what anyone says. He beat everybody. Did he fight him at the right time?
And it's aging well. It's yes. In hindsight, it's better and better. Floyd.
Did he fight him at the right time, though? You can debate that with any resume out there.
With anybody, like, yeah.
It's a really, really tough debate. If you're going off of just straight up like boxing skills, like it's definitely
abilities,
Roy.
Skills. It's Roy. Roy. Nobody beats Roy. I said it.
He had the power too. Like Floyd wasn't blessed with the power. I know at 130 he had the power. Floyd.
And even one punch power though Roy had. Floyd never had.
That's what I mean.
Floyd was a good puncher in the lighter weights, and he stopped guys because he was super aggressive, and he stayed in the pocket. People forget that. You know, our man here definitely watched the pretty boy Floyd, who was the more aggressive one. He got hit in fights. He was willing to put his chin on the line because he believed in himself and his power. But Roy didn't even get hit. We didn't know Roy didn't have a chin because he never got hit. That's how damn good he was. And he was still knocking guys out. He wasn't taking risks because he didn't need to. He was that good, that fast, and he hit that hard. Putting his hands behind back and knocking guys out. But that's another thing. You mentioned the dance partners, and he was fighting guys that were not on his level. Guess what? He did what you're supposed to do with guys who aren't on your level. Get him the hell out of there. He was highly real knockout in these guys, smoking them, winning every second of every round. Roy is something different. I hate that our generation or this next generation only knows that Roy you mentioned, the post John Ruiz Roy. Yeah. If he think about this, Dan. He retires a John Ruiz. What are we talking? We talking best fighter who's ever lived?
Yes. I said there's an alternate universe out there where he did.
Yep.
But he didn't. And that's
or even if he beats John Ruiz, then goes back down to 75 and squeaks by Tarver.
Yeah, doesn't get knocked out.
Doesn't get the rematch where he gets starched in two rounds. If he just even if he just squeaks by and goes, hey, you know what? That's father time. I'm getting old. I should beat this guy a lot easier. I'm done. You know, Tarver, you got next, bro. Go ahead. Boom. We're talking about Roy as possibly the best fighter who's ever lived.
Yeah, that was 2003 when he lost to Tarver. 2004. He was still fighting.
A part of me died that night watching Roy get KO'd that way.
I told that to Tarver when I first. I only met him this past year at an MVP event, calling fights with him. I was like, "You ruined that night." He said, I'm sorry. He thought I was like serious. He was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, man." I was like, "I'm just messing around." But like,
Tony is one of the coolest guys out there.
Oh, he's awesome.
Awesome.
That's the only thing with Jones is he stuck around really long and he had some just horrible losses. Not just the Tarver fight, just the next 5-7 years. And Floyd left on top. So, right. You know, there's a lot of fans out there, maybe casuals, who are like, oh, Floyd's the greatest ever. Like, you know, he's 50-0, blah, 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 blah. So I understand the debate.
Yeah.
No, all right, here's another one.
Hey, guys. So my question is regarding Jake Paul. Not a fan whatsoever, which is not shocking. But this is neither kind of here nor there. My question is, you know, I hear a lot of people like Canovio and other boxing people like Chris Mannix saying things like, you know, Jake Paul's good for the sport. He brings attention. He brings eyeballs. He's bringing in new fans. And if that's happening, great. But from what I'm seeing, he's not doing well pay-per-view-wise. You know, like the Mike Perry fight did, like, terrible numbers. They're saying this Chavez Jr. fight did terrible numbers. His only pay-per-views that did well were when he fights UFC guys like Nate Diaz. But the people buying those fights are primarily Nate Diaz fans. So, you know, obviously the Paul Tyson fight did well on Netflix, but that was Mike Tyson. Tyson could have fought anybody, and millions of people would have watched. So, obviously, I know Canovio is a little bit biased because you get paid, you work for MVP. So, I think what he's doing for women's boxing is great. I'm all for that. But is he really bringing in new fans? Seems to me like he's just pissing off existing boxing fans, which seems like Kenobia likes as well, which I don't really get why you like the trolling aspect of it. But if he's not bringing in new fans to the sports, his fights aren't doing great business. He's kind of just a clown. His skill level is terrible.
Right, he went on for a really long time here. Good points. Like Jake, I sorry, yes, I do work for MVP. Jake Paul is such a small part of MVP's what they do day to day. Like they put on ton. Like we're doing our 14th or 15th prospect card next month, back to back nights. Like we have like 10, 15 fights, title fights, women's fights. Jake fights once or twice a year. Like they're a full fledged boxing promotion now that are trying to challenge some of the other promotions out there, and they're doing it through women's boxing, which you can't just say is as like a sidebar. That's like a main thing. Like they're trying to corner that market and do that. In terms of pay-per-view, like no one is really doing well on pay-per-view these days. I don't think that's a good gauge to figure out. And I've said this numerous times about Jake Paul. He's going to have a longer impact on the sport as a promoter than a fighter. Like if you don't like his fighting career, fine. I understand that. Like, I don't know how far he'll go. Will he fight Joshua? Will he ever come close to winning a title? I don't know. How many more years does he have left? But he's talked about wanting to stay in the sport as a promoter with MVP. And if he could do that for the next 20 years, how is that a negative? Like, the guy has 30 million Instagram followers. He's one of the most recognizable faces in the entire world. The fact that he just tweets about boxing, the fact that he's even in this sport is a positive. I don't see it as a negative. In terms of the clowning and the trolling, that's because like there are some boxing people out there that are, you know, the holier than thou boxing media that believe that there's no room for a Jake Paul. Like there's no room. Like this sport's a joke. The sport is a circus. It's being overrun right now by a whole other government across the world. It didn't take long for them to take over the entire sport. So don't like try to say the sport is like Jake Paul doesn't belong in boxing. Boxing, he's welcome. He should be welcomed in. You may not like his fighting style and all that, but I don't see it like that.
And I've been having this conversation for a while where people will be like, I remember a buddy of mine, an old buddy of mine from high school even was like, hey man, Jake Paul's great for the sport. He's bringing in new eyes. And I agree. I'm like, is he really? And especially this is the beginning when he first started fighting. Cause I'm like, cause those cards back then or when he was fighting were so low level. I'm like, well, the new fans are now being introduced to bad boxing and that's not good for the sport. But the adjustment that has been made recently, you said it perfectly. It's not even so much about Jake Paul anymore. It's about MVP Promotions. They're doing such a good job with these builder cards, which is a huge vacuum in the sport. We don't have those sub-championship level fights that much. MVP's doing it. Pro Box TV is doing it. TKO is trying to do it, you know, moving forward. You know, there's been a vacuum in the sport for that for a number of years now. So they filled that gap. Then the women fights, which are actually becoming popular. They're gaining steam over the last couple of years. Didn't have a home. Now they have a home. And the cards that they're making are actually good. Again, I'm saying we should mix the cards. Let's go back to men and women fighting.
Yeah, I think they will.
I don't need a whole card full of women again.
I think that was a one-off. I think that was a celebration for Taylor Serrano.
And I get it. And to your point, what you said about Jake Paul, if you just look at the way he's fighting, who he's fighting, how he's fighting, this is a vehicle to get him recognition in the sport so his commercial company can take over. Absolutely. It's very, very smart business. Very, very smart business. So I think ultimately he is going to be good for the sport. And I think he's pissing off the old heads, which I get, and it happens, and transitions. Like, what are we doing? Well, I get you, but I you know what's funny? I just watched the Christy Martin documentary again the other night. And guys, everyone listening, if you don't know how good Christy Martin was, go watch that documentary and watch her highlight reel.
Her movie's coming out with Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, that too. So that should get more play. Knocking girls' heads off. She could really fight.
She's a big fan of Jake.
And I bet you in the 90s when she was fighting, a lot of old heads are like, what the hell are we doing putting these women on these undercards? You know, and I'm not saying like because of how women, I'm saying like that was Jake Paul then. Like, what the hell are we doing with this YouTube guy on a main event? And I've likened him to Butterbean before, where it's like, yeah, you know, it's not high level, but he knocks people out. It's entertaining. You put him on the card, you know, except now we just inverted it. He's at the top of the card and not in the undercard.
Because of his ability to get people to care, marketing. I think that's another thing, too, fighters should look at. How come Jake Paul's at the top of the sport? I've been in this sport for 10 years because people give a shit one way or another. They either love him or they hate him. He's built up a fan base through marketing YouTube channels. I think a lot of fighters have their own YouTube channels now. Like, well, Lamont Roach is a great example. He streams every day. He builds his community. So
Lamont's different though, because he did it the traditional way. He became Instagram famous later.
I get it.
So Ryan Garcia is a guy who was, I mean, he did have the amateur background, of course, but he was, you know, social media famous before he got to the championship, the high level. Jake Paul's another
really
one of those
good
guys.
Fighter. Good absolutely. Amateur,
still,
Ryan.
Still, again, good amateur, very good fighter. Probably never going to be a world champion, but he's going to be in championship fights, and he has been. Jake Paul, different. It's a very different. Listen, there's so many ways to get to a title. There's the way I got to a title was very different than other people's, in a more traditional grassroots, you know, selling tickets. Jake's doing it the way that he can because of the vehicle that he has,
yeah.
And his vehicle is what he's created. So you gotta give him credit for that. But in terms of going back to what I was saying about that point about the Christy Martin and Butterbeans that were on the undercards, my grandfather hated Butterbean. He's like, what is this bullshit on the undercard of Mike Tyson? I want to see Oscar De La Hoya fight a great fight against Felix Trinidad. I don't want to see this fat guy go knock out a guy who's half drunk. Yeah, so the old heads are always going to be mad during the transitions. I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. But I think ultimately we're moving in a very positive direction.
Yeah, I think Jake overpowers a lot of the good that MVP is doing. Like I've been with them since day one. They've hired a lot of good boxing people. The grassroots club shows do not make money, and we've done 14 or 15 of them to build stars. That takes a lot. But I get it. Jake is going to, even today, he just put out a statement that he's going to start suing people that claim his fights are rigged. Like, that's not going to win over the public. I know that's like something that he wants to do for himself, but that's not going to get him any more fans or anything out there. But ultimately,
well, he also loves the sport. I think that's genuine, and I think that shows. Too.
Bro, he would have when he was doing his podcast. He doesn't do it anymore. He'd have Benavidez on the show. He would have fighters on the show. He would just tweet, "Oh, I'm watching the Usyk fight." That's good. Like, the sport has dwindling eyeballs. The sport is dying. And then this guy who's popular, love him or hate him, he has a huge following, likes the sport, likes being around fighters. I've seen him, like, you know, definitely dedicated to it. And he has a company that's doing really good things. I get the hate. I get it, but he's doing a lot of good as well. I'm not just saying that because they pay me, okay? I said that before they paid me. How about that?
That's why he got hired.
Hey, guys, big fan.
I really
want to talk about the Top Rank thing. I have a theory for why there's been no deal yet. I think you guys are a little pessimistic on it. What's holding it up, I believe, is the UFC TKO boxing deal, which will be bundled together. I think all of the networks are waiting to see who gets that deal, which is going to be like a massive multi-billion-dollar deal because it's also got the UFC bundled in it. And I think Top Rank is going to have to wait until either that deal's done or some people fall out of contention, some networks or streamers, before they get a new deal. And they'll probably get whoever loses out on that, because that's just TKO boxing bundled with the Saudis, bundled with UFC is obviously a much bigger deal.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about this last episode.
It's kind of been what's, you know, and it hasn't been all that secret either that was the issue or one of the issues, but there's a lot of things in play. That's one of them.
I had some
pretty big meetings this weekend regarding this kind of stuff. I really can't say a whole lot, but that's part of it, but that's not all of it.
But TKO being out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a thing. And, but I, some little things that I've heard is that ESPN doesn't want to be exclusive to one entity again. They don't want a straight up exclusive deal like they have with Top Rank. So they might be a little skeptical to do an exclusive deal with TKO. But another thing, this is a behemoth. If TKO can say, you know, we'll give you a new UFC deal, which is up soon, and that's massive. And we give you, you know, Friday, Saturday programming with this boxing. It's not the biggest fights. You know, they're going to be this league or whatever, but it's going to be compelling. And most importantly, it's programming, which with every network is looking for right now, especially ESPN. They have to fill in those hours. So, yeah, I definitely agree. Like, once that first domino falls, which is TKO, and they find a network, then Top Rank should be able to find one as well or figure out what they're doing next.
Just so you know, it's not going to be about dominoes and the timing. The deal will be done before the first domino falls. But
well, Chris has all this insider information, doesn't want to share with us.
That's when we're going to find out, put it that way.
Okay. All right. Insider over here. Schefter.
Hey guys, Hector here, big fan. So something I wanted to bring up, as far as Teofimo Lopez, he has all the talent in the world, a career pretty much completely full of self-sabotage, and just shooting himself in the foot every chance he gets. What fighter, maybe from the earlier eras, reminds you of him, where he has so much talent, he could be making all this money, very marketable, but he just literally does everything you can think of to get in his own way?
That's a good question. I vetted this one. I was starting to think, because I wouldn't be sitting here thinking of one. It's hard to think of someone that does the self-sabotage, because we're living in a new era now where you can tweet your thoughts. You could put out videos eating a banana like Teofimo did. You can constantly shoot yourself in the foot via social media. I can only think of guys that were lazy or guys that just didn't train hard. And I was watching a bunch of Riddick Bowe videos. I got on Riddick Bowe TikTok. And Rock Newman saying that the guy just gorged himself with food. And Riddick said it himself. I couldn't stop eating. Came in like 15, 20 pounds heavier for the rematch with Holyfield. We've heard that story. I'm sure you know dozens of guys like that who had all the talent, were just lazy. I don't know about a guy that self-sabotaged their career in terms of like bad business. I'm sure there are some out there, but
Riddick Bowe was a good one, because the way he handled that, you know, stripping himself of the title and being like, I don't need this,
dumping it in the garbage,
was such a bad PR move.
Great picture, though.
Yeah, yeah. Iconic.
Legendary
iconic
photo.
Even. I'm trying to think of some other guys. So, it can be related, but one that's funny, because it actually worked out for him really well, is Arturo Gatti. He loved shooting himself in the foot from getting super partied and doing, you know, partying a ton and doing a ton of drugs, to attacking his significant others, to attacking police officers.
Which, like, probably to made getting him a better fighter.
To getting into a car accidents, like a bunch of things that got in his way that were based around his partying, I would imagine, but also his anger issues. He's a guy that consistently shot himself in the foot. Angel Manfredi was a guy who similarly demons affected him. He got into some crazy number of car accidents throughout his career, to the point where they took away his license. And you're like, you can't drive anymore, champ. Like, you're way too good at this sport to consistently be crashing your car all the time, because you're a crazy person.
What about bad business? Clarissa Shields.
It's working out for her.
But she was on Showtime. I remember she did like one of the best numbers on Showtime ratings a couple years ago, like right out of the Olympics. She was headlining on Showtime and doing like, I think she did like 500 million views or so, viewers. But then, like, I've heard that she's, you know, not the easiest
500
to deal
million?
With.
What? No, no.
500 no, what? 500,000.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
The whole country was tuned in. The whole country was tuned in to watch Clarissa Shields fight a no-hoper. No, it was Oof. She was getting really good ratings on Showtime, but I just heard stuff about her. Like, she's not the easiest to work, obviously, because Showtime did not work with her right away. Right after that, now she's pretty much on an island by herself. She could potentially sign with MVP. But that's someone I could think of, like, off the top of my head. But, you know, there's not, like I said, like, we're living in a new era where Teofimo can just, you can shoot yourself in the foot with one video, in one day.
Yeah, but also it can be gone in a day. You know, yeah, that's another thing. The news is way faster.
Ryan Garcia.
Look at Tank. Look how much trouble Tank. He's caused himself over the years. And even business-wise, by not fighting certain guys. You know, like Tank gets a lot of heat from people because he didn't fight certain guys at certain times. Those are essentially business moves.
Ryan Garcia.
It seems way more. Yeah, Ryan Garcia, I don't know. He wants to fight, though.
He's beefing hard now with Oscar. Ryan has done something really smart. He signed a deal with Kick, which is a streaming platform. So it's basically Ryan Garcia goes to the mall and they just follow him.
And he gets a million views and gets paid.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, Ryan Garcia goes to this. Ryan Garcia goes to that. He's streaming with other streamers and stuff. But apparently Oscar called him up and he was screaming at him. He was like a party while these girls are around. Oscar's on the phone. He's clowning Oscar in public. And Oscar, I think it's been a great partnership between the two of them.
I was going to say, I don't think that hurt him at all.
I think it's now
his public
beefs
with Oscar have not hurt his career.
And I think they've both gotten like a lot out of the partnership. It's where I think there's one more fight left, according to Ryan Garcia. And Oscar has built him up.
Oscar is the golden boy for a reason, and it's not just because he's got a left hook of gold and a jab. It's because he's got an aura about him that you want to see everything he's doing. Oscar De La Hoya could have done laundry in the 90s, and a million women would have tuned in. Ryan Garcia has that same power.
But obviously, Oscar was so much better and way more accomplished. And that's something Ryan said too, is Oscar doesn't respect me as a fighter. It's like, dude, like, do you even respect yourself? Like, you're putting half-ass efforts in. You're doing PEDs. Like, the last fight, what the heck was
you're
that?
Drinking so a whole like, camp and fight week.
That's what I mean.
Fight week
so
is
like,
crazy.
You both have done a lot to hurt the relationship, and you both have done a lot to help it. Like, I think Golden Boy's done a phenomenal job building Ryan Garcia up, and I think Ryan Garcia has done a great job of you know, building himself up as well. I think we have one more.
Hi, this is Cali Pacheco from Fresno, California, and one of the topics that I would like to hear you guys talk about is how the sport of boxing has evolved from just 20 to 30 years ago. I constantly hear people, boxing fans, talking about how boxing used to be more aggressive, more toe-to-toe, and now how the sport has evolved, more of a chess game. So if you guys can talk about that would be great. Thank you.
What do you think? He's pretty much saying like the sport back in the 15-round era was a little more brawler, and now we're seeing more brutal, defense first.
So I'm gonna go off this. So there's obvious shifts throughout the timeline of boxing errors. And the shifts come from fighters, from standout fighters. In the 70s, you had Ali.
Right?
You had Ali, yes. And then, so what happens is, if you look at the 1980 and 1984 Olympic teams, they all fought like Ali, because that was the premier guy. They all had that little shimmy, that snapping jab, that movement, that little shuffle. Everybody wanted to be like Ali. And then in the 80s, you know, you had Sugar Ray Leonard, and now you had a guy who was flashy like Ali, but man, he was a puncher. So then the 90s, we start seeing more guys that are fighting in that way. Oscar De La Hoya comes up. Oscar De La Hoya, who has more of that style. Yes, he's got that little bit of that shuffle, that Ali shuffle. Yes, he's got that brilliant jab, but he had a left hook from hell, and he's looking to knock you out, and he knocked everyone out when he turned pro, which is coming from that Sugar Ray Leonard. Then we go into Floyd, and we got Floyd. And Floyd is much more of a boxer. He's protecting the O. We had a generation of guys protecting their O that had to stay undefeated. It was the era of the undefeated. I think we're leaving that era. I think that we're seeing more guys willing to take risks, guys who are not protecting their O's anymore. And I think we're actually entering a phase where we're going to see some really good fights, where guys are actually fighting, biting down and fighting. And we're seeing a little bit already. We're seeing it a little bit already, I think. So I think it's more of just where you fall in the eras based on who was the star of that era.
Really good point. I mean, why wouldn't you? We see this in baseball all the time. See it in other sports. Like the three-point shot now in basketball is so prevalent because Steph Curry changed the game. And now everyone is hoisting up 30-plus threes. Baseball, you see it all the time in analytics. It's changed the whole sport. You copycats, you know, football, we see the same thing. Wildcat offense was a big thing for a while. And boxing is no different. So if you see a Floyd Mayweather who's made it to the top and is making shit
highest
ton of
paid
money.
Athlete in the yes. world. Highest paid athlete in the world. Athlete, yes. guys, not boxer. Highest paid athlete was Floyd Mayweather at the time.
And you're in a gym and you're a fighter and you've dedicated your whole life. This is what I'm doing. You best believe you're going to start doing a shoulder roll. If it's good, bad, or ugly, you best believe you're going to start doing defense first. And Floyd it's been 10 years since Floyd fought in his last meaningful fight, the last Pacquiao fight, a Berto fight, and then McGregor, 2017. It's been about 10 years. So, yeah, I would like to see boxing get back to a little more offensive-minded. I don't think it's going to be full-fledged brawls. I know that's like the thing now. Tom and Jerry fights need to go away. I want to see blood, guts, and all that stuff. I would like to see a little bit more of a balance. Like, I'd like to see less defensive-minded fighters and a little more risk you know, let's avoid May 2nd in Times Square, where it was all, you know, 20 punches around. Let's find, you know, let's see what comes next in terms of the style out there.
Well, I think, you know, you mentioned Usyk. the 15 round.
His style's fun.
Style's very fun, but it's so high level.
Yeah, like, who's going
to
do that?
You're going to need so much amateur. You have to start boxing when you're 5, and you're going to have to be at a high, very high level from your teens on. It's a really difficult style to mimic. That's why I didn't mention Manny Pacquiao, because he didn't move the trends, because you can't fight like him. That's why I didn't mention Roy Jones. He didn't move the trend because fighters can't fight like him. You can't mimic that style. You can mimic an Ali. You're not going to be as good, obviously. You can mimic a Sugar Ray Leonard. You can mimic Oscar De La Hoya. You can mimic Floyd Mayweather. You can't mimic guys like Pacquiao and even Mike Tyson. You can't mimic a Mike Tyson. You have Pacquiao, Roy Jones, Mike Tyson, those kind of guys. Usyk is going to be another one. He's going to be a really tough guy to mimic. What was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say. Dang it. I had a good one.
We're going to end the show anyway. We got to think about it. But Usyk, yeah, like he's, I would say he's the dominant. We talked about this in the last episode. He's probably the most dominant fighter of the last 10 years, him and Canelo. You know, Canelo's style.
Remember my point. The 15 round error, you mentioned that off the top, which, guys, boxing 15 rounds is a really, really difficult thing. You had to fight. Like there wasn't, I'm just going to get him. I'm not going to box easily to a 15 round decision. You're going to have to fight. And that's why those fights probably were a lot more brutal from our friend here who called in. It makes me think of Leonard and Hearns, you know, when they fought, and it's like Hearns got out there, started, was boxing really good and was, you know, really giving Leonard hell. And then Leonard got to him eventually, forced him, dropped him, hurt him. You know, Hearns comes back. 15 rounds is a long time. 12 round fight. Hearns wins that fight. He doesn't have to be forced into boxing.
40 plus minutes. 15 rounds.
Crazy. 36. So 12 rounds is 36 minutes of action. That's crazy. That's such a long time from a metabolic output standpoint. And then you're going to add 9 more minutes.
9 minutes. Joe Goosen, who I work with at Amazon, or when I do these pay per views, it's probably my favorite part of the gig is just hanging out with him. Out of nowhere, he goes, I wish fights were 15 rounds. It's like the most old head fucking statement ever. Usyk's not that good. He goes, Usyk's not that good. And then later on, I wish there was 15 rounds.
Love that. That's awesome.
That guy's the best. I would love to get him on the show. He just hates doing podcasts. I tried so many. I got him to call in once, man, early on, the first couple episodes of this show.
I bet you grabbed him live. He'd be good.
He doesn't like cameras. He doesn't like. I took out my phone.
He's got such great hair and style. Why wouldn't he like cameras?
He had another great line. I'm up there on the stage, and I took my phone out. And I'm getting him. I'm putting the phone in his face. Nothing. I was gonna post. I was just for like memories. And he goes, stop. He grabs the phone. He goes, where's that going? I'm like, nowhere, Joe. I'm like, I'm just messing around. He goes, let me tell you what. He's like, me and your dad's era. Someone took out a camera at a party, got their ass kicked.
Yeah, because the guys are doing bad things.
Yeah, he's like, anyone who took out a camera, they got pummeled at a party. And I'm just sitting there with my phone recording literally every moment of the
day.
That's
the most Hollywood party boy thing to say. It's like, no, no, no.
Well, he discovered Mr. T, him and his brother. He just casually told me that story once. And his Mr. T was a bouncer at a club. Him and his brother show up in a limo. Mr. T is they look at him and say, wow, you're an interesting looking guy. Come hang out with us. They bring him into the limo. They go out all night. Next thing you know, Mr. T is Mr. T. He just casually told us that story one day.
Did he have the chains?
Yes.
I feel like Mr. T is not even a construction. Like, that's just the way he is. He's not a construct. That's what that guy is.
That's what he was. Yeah. That story should not be buried at the end of a podcast, but we have to go. Maybe we'll get Joe on to tell all of his stories. I would love that. Maybe we'll have to set that up. But we'll be back.
Don't hold your breath. But maybe next Vegas trip, we can grab him.
Yeah, well, that would be fun.
Next Vegas trip
would be that would be a lot of fun. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. I'm a little rusty with the ending of the show. Goodbye.